Today on the podcast, we're digging into one of the biggest challenges in business today. How do you build a sustainable, better-for-you brand in a category as brutally competitive as CPG? Our guest is Analia Krebs, founder and CEO of Social Nature, a platform that's helped over 600 mission-driven brands connect with more than a million everyday shoppers looking for healthier, more sustainable products. Analia has spent more than a decade on the front lines of this shift, and today she shares the real strategies and realities behind what it takes to move from niche to mainstream.
I think for a lot of green businesses out there, that is, you know, kind of an opportunity to leverage, because people are happy to share when there's a story behind it, a mission behind it. And so I really tapped into that, both with Ethical Deal and with Social Nature. And really, from day one, I thought of every consumer that joined Social Nature as an everyday influencer.
Welcome to The Capitalist Hippie, the podcast where we challenge the old rules of business to build something better. I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert, entrepreneur, and lover of bold, sustainable ideas. And every week, we dive into data-backed insights, groundbreaking ideas, and real-world strategies that help you outthink and outmaneuver the status quo.
So with Social Nature, we went for, you know, the advocates. We went for the eco-friendly bloggers, you know, whether they had like a vegan food blog or a fitness blog. Those were kind of the micro influencers that we built relationships with from day one. And that really helped us get high quality, you know, our target market, consumers that were looking to live a healthier, more eco-friendly life.
From reimagining the traditional sampling model to building a digital-first platform that's rewriting how better-for-you brands grow, Analia shares the hard-won lessons every founder needs to hear. Let's get into it. Analia, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Marco.
So I wanted to kind of go in two paths. The first one being, you're a long-term entrepreneur. You've built a business, Social Nature. And so we're going to discuss a bit around that journey. But then on the other side, it's so interesting because you have like over a million shoppers that use your platform. And I'm going to guess, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of brands that you have interacted with over the last decade. And that's an immense amount of kind of go-to-market data and understanding of like, how do you bring a product to market? So I'd love to kind of explore those two paths. But to begin with, what was your kind of spark or your idea and your kind of disruption that you wanted to do with Social Nature? And what was not available in the market at the time that led you to start this?
So when I first started Social Nature, this wasn't my first company. I had done two others prior to this, both focused on introducing people to greener choices. And what I learned from those other companies was that there's really three barriers that prevent the everyday consumer from making greener choices. And the first is price, the second is trust, and the third is convenience. And so it was, you know, when I've always been someone that's wanted to help build the green economy and make a difference. And so barriers are really, you know, interesting, because if you can reduce the barriers, you can start to make a positive impact. And so for me, you know, I was thinking about where can I have the most impact, because that's always been something that's driven me. And so I thought about, what do people use every day? And it ultimately comes down to those everyday products, like what you eat for breakfast, what you clean your house with, what you feed your pet, you know, what you put on your body in the shower, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Those are the products that everybody uses. Everybody has, you know, goes grocery shopping once a week or whatever it is. And it really kind of struck me that, you know, that's an area where if I could help more people make, you know, small changes in their everyday shopping habits, that was a really exciting, that was where I wanted to move the needle. And that's where I felt I could have the most impact. So I focused on introducing people to healthy, sustainable groceries. And I really took those three barriers that I knew from my previous experience marketing greener choices to consumers, that really, you know, was preventing that everyday consumer from buying better. And so with the first barrier being price, I knew that I needed to create a business model that reduced the price of groceries that were better for you and better for the planet. And so I spoke to a lot of consumer packaged goods companies and learned how they were currently marketing to consumers. And at the time, you know, it was in-store demonstrations. I'm sure everybody's gone to like a Costco and had a bite of something. It was coupons, you know, good old-fashioned printed coupons were, you know, and still are in many ways, a marketing vehicle of choice for many brands. It was going to consumer shows, farmers markets. It was pretty grassroots. And with my background being digital marketing, I thought, okay, how can I use kind of the best of digital marketing, which is targeting, you know, collection of data, amplification in terms of reach and brand awareness, and bring that to the consumer packaged goods industry, and more specifically, bring it to, you know, the brands that were changing the world for the better and producing products that were better for people and the planet. And so that was really the gap in the market that I saw, both from the consumer point of view, in terms of the barriers that were preventing them from buying better products, but also from the CPG industry point of view. Back then, and this is, you know, we're talking 10 years ago now, you know, pre-COVID, pre-disruption of, you know, digital coming into grocery, it was a novel concept to really take a digital-first approach to retail marketing.
Before we dive into how Analia built Social Nature, it's important to understand what she was up against. In 2014, if you were a CPG brand, even a mission-driven one, your marketing playbook was basically stuck in the 90s. Think coupon flyers, Costco demos, and trade shows. There was almost zero digital-first thinking in grocery. When Analia talks about moving sampling online and turning the grocery store into the warehouse, she wasn't just tweaking an old system, she was disrupting an entire industry mindset that had been untouched for decades. You did this through this kind of business model. It was kind of like a reinvention of almost like the sampling and the idea being like if you were a CPG company and you wanted to get into retail, but you wanted to get kind of feedback on how the product might do, you would go to Social Nature. Social Nature would then facilitate your products to shoppers to then give you feedback. Is that like kind of the correct business model?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was exactly. It was a kind of a 2.0 of sampling. We really saw the grocery store as our warehouse. I didn't want to get, there was a lot of back then 10 years ago where, you know, there was the Birch boxes of the world, the sampler boxes of the world, like subscription boxes were a really big thing back then. But I didn't want to get into the subscription box business. I wanted to get consumers into the grocery store, which is where they shopped for groceries back then. and many still do, of course. And that's really that getting the consumer to the point of sale was where I knew I could drive the most impact for brands. Because when a consumer knows where to buy something and goes through that journey of, you know, hunting down the product in the grocery store, putting it in their basket, that's an experience that leads to a higher repeat purchase rate. And so the grocery store was my warehouse. My job as a digital marketer was to find, you know, as many targeted consumers for brands as possible using online digital methods, and then ultimately converting that online demand into in-store sampling. By getting people into the grocery store to buy those products. And then, yes, getting feedback, getting data, getting product reviews, getting survey insights, you know, getting as much as possible to share back with the brands so that they could really improve their products, improve their go-to-market, and so forth. So, yeah, it was definitely disrupting the standard sampling model. And, you know, and I wouldn't... Back then, it was really a novel concept. Like it really took, honestly, I want to say it kind of took the pandemic and the disruption that brought into the grocery industry for us to really see strong adoption of that model, because the CPG industry had just been so used to doing things in a certain way. And taking this digital approach was new to them. But yeah, that was our turning point in 2020 when our growth really picked up.
to touch base on a bit of the growth. So Social Nature tries to bring in a pool of shoppers, and you've been able to hit some really impressive numbers. I think it's that you've had over 1 million people use the platform and are shopping on there to get samples. So they're your, essentially they're your customers that you need to bring into the platform. You then need to have relationships with grocery stores to be able to facilitate that. But your core customer ends up being the CPG brand. And so where was the growth? Was the growth, well, or maybe you had the chicken and egg scenario, where was it mostly growth on CPG brands or mostly growth on customers, or both of them kind of had to play at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, there's been times where one has exceeded the other. So in the early days, we saw really good traction with, you know, consumers signing up to Social Nature. And I remember thinking to myself one day, you know, I just don't have enough kind of inventory, you know, of samples to offer the demand that is coming at me. Like, you know, do I put a, you know, hold please queue on my website? Because, you know, we had hundreds of thousands of consumers signing up, and I was, you know, I had the other problem. I was really trying to grow my supply of product offers and samples to be able to give to these consumers. So certainly, I would say in the beginning stages, the demand from consumers was stronger than the supply of products. And there's been years where that has actually flipped, which has been interesting as well. So it's, you know, it's that two-sided marketplace dynamic where you're always managing that supply and demand. And I think what is an added challenge for our model is everything is tied back to that grocery store. And so there is kind of this geo-targeted nature of, you know, needing to not only have demand from the consumer, but having geo-targeted demand, having enough Whole Foods shoppers, having enough Target shoppers, Kroger shoppers, Walmart shoppers, right? We're active across North America to satisfy the targeting needs and the distribution of the brands that we work with. And over time, you know, we're celebrating our 10th year this year. We've grown our brand awareness in the market, you know, and we've been lucky enough to work with over 600 brands across North America and thousands of product offers. So yes, we've built up our brand. And I think that's also often easier to do when you're in a vertical, right? Like we're not appealing to every single CPG brand. We're appealing to the natural product market. And so that's also helped us grow on the B2B side because we are in that vertical, and we've really built strong relationships with, you know, Plant-Based Food Association, Certified Organic Trade Association, all these green business networks. It's a tight community. And so that's also helped our growth.
Let's pause here for a second. In startup world, we talk a lot about the chicken and egg problem when building two-sided marketplaces. But in the CPG world, it's even trickier, because it's not just getting two sides on board. You're also fighting retail distribution limitations, shelf space politics, and geo-targeted demand. And Aaliyah wasn't just matching the brands and consumers. She had to synchronize inventory, regional access, and customer desire all at once. Without a traditional retail footprint, it's a balancing act that even seasoned operators struggle with. When you say that you have hundreds of thousands of people subscribing and wanting to get CPG products, what did you do from a digital marketing perspective to grow those numbers? Because those numbers, obviously that's your background, and you had ethical deals, so you kind of understood. Was it just that the market right now wants a lot of this, or was it just that kind of your digital marketing tactics were working? Like what was kind of the, how did you do it?
Yeah. So I did have the benefit of having run Ethical Deal previously, and I learned a lot through that. And so I carried some of those lessons and learnings forward. And one of the things that was really successful with Ethical Deal was our Refer a Friend program. And so right away with Social Nature, I implemented a Refer a Friend program. So for every consumer that signed up, we had an incentive in place for them to share the product offers with their friends. We made it really easy through social media. We gave them unique, you know, trackable links that could be tracked back to them. And so we saw a really high share rate happening. And the other thing that I had learned from Ethical Deal was people like to share good stuff. Like people aren't going to share necessarily, conventional products, you know, like Tide or Coca-Cola on their social media feed. I mean, everybody knows of those brands and there's nothing really special to share there. But when it's, you know, Seventh Generation or, you know, the unscented company that you had on the other day, and there's a special product offer available for these, you know, do good brands, people also have personal brands on social media. And so for them to associate their personal social brand with these better for you products and services was always kind of an easier thing to do. And so I think for a lot of green businesses out there, that is, you know, kind of an opportunity to leverage, because people are happy to share when there's a story behind it, a mission behind it. And so I really tapped into that, both with Ethical Deal and with Social Nature. And really, from day one, I thought of every consumer that joined Social Nature as an everyday influencer. And so with that mindset, I built out the user journey to be, you know, very social first. Like, you were asked to sign up with your social account of choice. You know, every offer that we introduced to you, there was prompts to share with your friends. When you came back to the platform and wrote a review about the product that you just sampled, we asked you to share it with your friends and made that easy and made it fun and gamified it. And so that was a big source of our growth and still is. The other piece is, and so a lot of it is kind of, you know, built into the platform, the product reviews. So we have over 3 million natural product reviews on socialnature.com. Wow. Across thousands of products. We come up on first page of search for most natural products that you search for, especially if you add in the word reviews. And so over time, that's really built up a strong organic search source of traffic. And the CTA on those landing pages is, you know, again, you know, try this product for free or get it at 50% off. And so with a powerful CTA like that, we've been able to convert that organic search result into a sign up and ultimately a sale for the brands that we work with. So that's been an ongoing effort as well. The last thing I'll mention is, and I think this can help, you know, any business just starting out to build their community, is going for those early, you know, kind of core power users. And so we did that as well. So with Social Nature, we went for, you know, the advocates, we went for the eco-friendly bloggers, you know, whether they had like a vegan food blog or a fitness blog. Those were kind of the micro influencers that we built relationships with from day one. And that really helped us get high quality, you know, our target market consumers that were looking to live a healthier, more eco-friendly life. And those bloggers referred us a lot of traffic. And then, you know, we had an appealing offering for those consumers when they landed on our page. So yeah, really kind of identifying those early advocates, making it social, and thinking about SEO from day one as well. But really just baking it all into the platform. So we didn't have to spend a lot of money on paid ads and the traditional forms of marketing.
One thing I really want you to listen for in the next part is how much the entire consumer landscape has shifted. When Analia first started building green businesses, natural products were considered niche and almost fringe. Now today, giant retailers like Walmart are aggressively positioning themselves as better for you destinations. This shift didn't just happen by accident, it happened because consumers demanded it. Brands evolved, and visionaries like Analia helped shape the market from the ground up. I knew you when you ran Ethical Deals, and that was close to about 15 years ago. And I remember at the time thinking about Ethical Deals, thinking, "Oh yeah, this is just for vegans, and this is for people that are thinking in this kind of, this is what they do." But the market has changed in the last 15 years. Obviously, you've been part of this this movement and change in how people consume and what are they putting on them? What are they putting in? And how are those products being created? And what does it do to the environment? Obviously, has changed over the last 10 to 15 years. So what have you seen just generally from the market, from the consumers? Like, have the consumer types, because you just mentioned like the eco bloggers, and has the consumer types changed pretty dramatically over the last kind of 10 years to be a bit more kind of mainstream, where people at their core are starting to care a lot more. And obviously Whole Foods has grown at the same time, and a bunch of other things. But just like, how has that market changed over that period of time?
Drastically. So my first business, even before Ethical Deal, was a online eco-friendly business directory. And that was around 15 years ago. And there was no online eco-friendly business directory back then. So it's just, it's such a fun kind of mind game to think back to that 15 years ago. And then now we're seeing Walmart, you know, publish press releases around wanting to become a destination for emerging better for you brands. Like, they're going after Whole Foods. And so I think that's a good signal for where the market is at, because Walmart certainly appeals to the mainstream shopper. And, you know, they've always been very kind of savings focused, and and what they're doing for the better for you market is, you know, because of their scale, they're able to buy in such volume and bring that price down for the everyday consumer. And so I've really seen a huge shift in where natural products are merchandised. I mean, we're even seeing one of the growth retailers this year is 7-Eleven. 7-Eleven is starting to really kind of look at what their assortment of products are, especially in the snack category and the beverage category, like bringing in more functional beverages, looking at ready-to-go healthy meals. And that's also appealing to the younger generation who is shopping more at 7-Eleven, especially for those grab-and-go meals and snacks throughout the day, and who want to buy better. So that's been an interesting change to see, and has certainly fueled the growth of the natural product industry, which is growing at a faster rate than conventional products. I've also seen, I mean, you know, every year there's kind of an ingredient or product that kind of, you know, is trending. At one point it was, you know, kale, and then it was cauliflower and seaweed, and, you know, there's always kind of different trends that appeal to consumers. But every year at Social Nature, because we have such a large audience, we actually do surveys, and we learn a lot through that. And so this year we did a shopping survey and asked, you know, our community, what do you care most about right now? And what came through, and it's interesting because it does change year over year. So this year, you know, they're really focused on clean and simple ingredients. I think consumers are a lot more aware of all the hidden junk that can go into products, you know, whether it's different types of oils or just, you know, too much sugar, like sugar being number one on the ingredients list. And so the awareness has really increased. And so they're looking for products that are clean and simple ingredients, things they can trust and easily understand. They're looking for products high in protein. So that's been, you know, that is certainly a trending piece, and that's showing up across all sorts of products. Low in sugar, or like no added sugar, is also really big right now, as well as high in fiber. And so, but you know, that may have looked different, say, 3 years ago. And so it does have to do with, you know, product innovation and what type of products are available. Like 15 years ago, plant-based meats, there really wasn't a lot on the market, right? And that changed significantly over the last 15 years. Or even plant-based cheese was never really, you know, that was a really niche product 15 years ago. You didn't really hear anybody talking about it. And now there's like high-end, really quality artisanal, like plant-based brie. And so the innovation, I think, has also really made this product category, natural products, a lot more accessible for the everyday consumer, because there's actually good quality, good tasting products out there to try that weren't there 15 years ago.
Yeah. And I think what you just said about, you know, 7-Eleven to Walmart, that's an interesting thing, because like how prices and the market are converged seems to be quite important. So like, obviously, depending on the type of customers, you know, I think the clean and simple often is hard to do, but I think people realize that there's a lot of crap in our food, and how people grow is really, really important. And what does it do for me? And so, how do you think, like, how much does, obviously price is so important, and this is kind of a conversation we hear all the time, especially around products that are typically better for you or grown in a better way, because typically that ends up kind of costing more money. How do you think that's going to kind of converge over the next kind of like five years? And if somebody was thinking about building you know, a new brand, a new food brand, a new CPG brand, like how important is that kind of that price point, meet you at the table type of price, but at the same time hitting these things where like it does need to be clean, it needs to be simple. Maybe that means processing's harder. Maybe that means like working with better farmers or doing it yourself. Like how much of that's at play?
Consumers want it all. they want price, they want convenience, they want it to taste good. It is hard. It is really hard. There's no two ways about it. And you do need, you know, you either need some pretty significant funding to really grow a CPG brand nowadays, or you need to have, you know, built in a really healthy margin, which, you know, some categories are easier to do that in than others, like beauty and supplements, for example, have typically the highest margins. So I think, and beverages as well is another category. And it's interesting because when I look at the volume of products that are produced from like an innovation point of view, beverages is one of the top categories, right? So we are seeing more innovation happening in the higher margin categories, and we are seeing less innovation happening in some of the categories that are just, you know, really hard to do. And especially with the funding environment in the last couple of years, we have seen, unfortunately, innovation take a bit of a step back in terms of volume of new products going to market. And we've seen a big shift to a focus on profitability, especially in the consumer packaged goods space. So that is, and I think that, you know, there are always cycles that relate to funding cycles and inflation and all sorts of things that impact pricing strategy and innovation. But certainly the last couple of years, we've seen it be a hard time, you know, supply chain issues that were kind of left over from the pandemic. We saw inflation, we saw cutbacks in the funding market. And so it's been interesting to see how brands have changed their go-to-market strategies. And I will say one thing, it is they're very conscious of margins. They're very conscious of kind of how they go to market. So an example of that would be we have seen less brands give away fully free products, and they are moving more towards discount offers and kind of wanting consumers to have a little bit of, say, skin in the game. and that is in relationship to trial, right? So that's like you're trying to go for a new customer that is new to your brand, and you're leading with a discount offer, not a free offer. So that's been a really interesting change. And I know why brands are doing that with a focus on profitability. I am curious to see how that pans out. We have so much data on our end around, you know, when it makes sense to use a discount offer, when it makes sense to use a free trial offer. And it really does come down to, you know, whether a consumer is familiar with your brand, is already buying in your category, and or has tried one of your products before. Like those three variables play a large role in the success we've seen of leading first foot forward with a discount offer or a free trial offer. So we try to advise brands accordingly based on the data that we have, but I think there is just such pressure right now to build a profitable business. And so marketing tactics are changing in relationship to that. We're also seeing less brands not, you know, even though Walmart might be calling them with a purchase order, they may actually say no to that because it takes so much in terms of, you know, production and access to capital to produce the volumes that a Walmart will require. And so sometimes if you say yes to that too early, you could be out of business or you could really struggle to meet the demands of Walmart. And so we're seeing brands kind of focus in on either specific regions that are strategically located to their points of distribution so that, you know, they can kind of cut costs there and not be shipping all across the country, and starting to work with, you know, brokers all across the country and having to build out that whole supply chain. They're kind of staying close to where they have their points of distribution or production. We're seeing brands kind of go all in on certain retailers. So, you know, let's say you just got distribution at Whole Foods, just really focusing on growing sales at that account, pulling back on new product launches, but then really focusing in on your core products and maybe even cutting some SKUs from your product line because every SKU is, you know, you need to put marketing dollars against. So there's a real focus, which again, I don't think is a bad thing, because it's, you know, it's just, it's good business fundamentals to, you know, to take a cold hard look at your business and really focus on your core products and your core retailers and build an efficient business, which ultimately, you know, in terms of coming back to the consumer, will hopefully lead to, you know, higher quality products where brands have a bit more control because they are profitable. And so they, and so the quality of products, I hope, will increase versus, you know, decrease, based on this focus and based on brands kind of taking back control and really focusing on those core SKUs. I think the other shift that I've seen is, as it relates to consumers, is brands are paying a lot of attention in terms of data and insights, in terms of reviews, like what is working well with the consumer and what is not. And then instead of spending a lot on innovation, they're spending on like tweaking their products and making them better. And so we've been able to help a lot of brands with that because we can share back the reviews and the insights from consumers who've tried their products, either for free or at a discount. And I mean, I love it. I love it when founders of brands are like literally reading every single review across thousands of reviews and making decisions on that.
I just want to underline what Analia is saying here, because if you're building in the impact space, this hits close to home. Yes, consumers want clean labels and eco-friendly sourcing, but they also want it cheap, convenient, and delicious. And now, with funding drying up and profitability becoming the new buzzword, sustainable brands are getting squeezed harder than ever. It's a reality check. Impact matters, but operational excellence matters even more. You brought up profit quite a few times, because obviously in this funding era right now, you know, there's a focus again back on profit. And you're also seeing manufacturing rather than subbing that out, which reduces your profit to try to bring that in, which is a little bit ironic too, because that means typically more money to do that in the beginning. So what, I guess a question around localization, like if you're a new brand and you're in the CPG space, you want to bring something to market, how important right now is kind of focusing a little bit, and obviously we're talking about in the age of potential tariffs across Canada and US and back and forth, like how important is localization right now to building that early brand? Because, like, you know, to me that means it's a little bit easier to be profitable when you can do something smaller, a little bit more localized, and then kind of expand from there. So do you think maybe it's going to take a little longer to get to kind of mass market for these brands?
I mean, if we're talking about brands in Canada, yes, but I think there's also, you know, especially right now, there's a real demand for Canadian products. And so what I have seen, though, is it, even in our, you know, because we do work with brands across North America, there's the Canadian brands that have scaled have all done a lot of exports, right? And so that has been part of the Canadian go-to-market strategy, is almost like sometimes it has been more efficient for a Canadian brand that's, say, based out west to go west across the border than east across the country. And that there's things that need to happen in Canada for that to be more efficient to do west, you know, west to east in Canada. And often it has to do with shipping and transport. Like, it's, you know, it's a huge country. And and then, you know, and the urban centers are on either sides of the country, right? And so that's where it will be, you know, there is definitely a time now for brands in Canada to lean in to Canada. And I love seeing, you know, the demand for Canadian products. But we have seen that Canadian brands at scale into the US and into Europe and into Asia, they have gotten to that point of scale more quickly. But it doesn't always need to be across the border. Like the Asian market has a huge demand for Canadian products. So, you know, it's interesting also to kind of, you know, just really think globally.
Before we get into the next part, it's worth stepping back and seeing the bigger game Analia is playing. Social Nature started as a smarter way to sample products, but what they've really built is a direct relationship with millions of conscious consumers. Now they're turning that into something even more powerful, owning the insights, the purchase data, and the personalization that will drive the next decade of better for you brand building. In a world where retail data is fragmented and third-party cookies are potentially disappearing, whoever owns the shopper relationship wins. The next 3 to 5 years, where do you think Social Nature and just the market that you're in, the CPG space, like where do you want to head to? And like, what's the kind of the big goals for both your business and where do you think the market's going to go?
Yeah. So big goals for us is really increasing the volume of products and offers that we have on our platform for the consumer. We really want to, help people make that switch as part of their weekly grocery shopping routine and really kind of build Social Nature into that weekly grocery shopping routine, which does mean, consistency and volume and variety of products and offers. So you'll be seeing kind of almost a bit of a, let's say, Instacart experience on Social Nature, where people will, choose the retailer that they shop at and then get, digital grocery flyers of offers to them through email and SMS, and in the future, perhaps an app for them to really engage with Social Nature on a weekly basis. So that's a focus on the consumer side. We also really want to leverage the 3 million product reviews that we have and use AI to make those reviews more useful, not only for consumers, in terms of, summarizing the 10,000 reviews we might have on a product and making it easy for them to make a decision based on other people's feedback, whether they should buy that product or not, but also for brands in terms of extracting interesting trends and insights and use cases from that large data set. So leading into AI is definitely a focus for us. The other opportunity that we have now is because we have introduced a cashback model with digital rebates, and we ask consumers to basically upload their receipt to Social Nature now in order to get cashback for the products that they try, that we now have access to receipt data, which is going to be really powerful for personalization in terms of understanding what is in people's groceries baskets and being able to introduce, better for you options for any conventional items that we see on their grocery receipt, and giving them, perhaps some nutritional information and some interesting kind of roll up insights on their grocery shopping habits. So kind of, a bit of like mint for groceries opportunity there, which is exciting for us. And then on the brand side, I think, digital has certainly arrived in the consumer packaged goods industry, and the bar is just being raised higher year over year for, more data, more insights. And so those are areas that are top of mind for us. We, brands come to us for sampling and new customer acquisition first, but we're finding they're staying for the data and insights. So, 5 years from now, Social Nature, in many ways will in some ways be like a data and insights company, because we just will have so much shopping data, consumer data, and be able to, leverage AI to make some, predictions as well to help brands with their innovation.
Annalia, that was a very fun conversation, but like super insightful, because you have like an insane amount of data and, I think 3 million reviews, over a million shoppers. And so, but you said something in the interview that you said consumers want it all. And I can definitely see that. So how does a brand, CPG brand, that's kind of building a new brand or starting out, or even ones that are been around for a while and are scaling, how do they take that information? And what would you do about that? Is that like dealing with everything, or is it, do you have to really hone in? How would you kind of address that as a brand?
You really need to build with the customer in mind. And so now, we're digital, no brand has any excuse. You can build up your own email database. You can use your social media following. You can use third-party companies, but to really keep asking your customer, is this resonating? What's working? What's not? What are, you know, what drew you to my product? What flavor should I launch next? It's those brands that are, you know, reading their reviews, putting them into, you know, AI to see what trends are coming from that, continuing to ask their customer as part of their, you know, e-commerce checkout experience, a couple questions. It's those brands that are really dialing into what's working, what's not, and using the feedback to inform their innovation pipeline. Those are the brands of the future, and those are the brands that really build those loyal advocates.
Listen to the consumer.
Yeah.
That's it for today's episode of The Capitalist Hippie. Huge thanks to Analia Krebs for bringing real-world honesty to what it actually takes to build a sustainable brand that lasts. If there's one thing that stuck with me, it's this. Doing good isn't enough. You have to be excellent at pricing, distribution, scaling, and still find a way to keep your mission intact. If you found this conversation helpful, inspiring, or maybe even a little sobering, share it with a friend who's building something meaningful. And if you're enjoying the show, it would mean a lot if you subscribe, leave a review, or just drop me a message with your thoughts. Always love hearing what's resonating with you. Thanks for tuning in, and until next time, keep breaking the rules strategically.